Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
People could die from diseases than from bombings in Gaza if the health system there is not put back on its feet quickly. This is a stern warning by the World Health Organization, WHO. Now, Save the Children also saying that the international community's failure to agree on a permanent ceasefire is costing thousands of lives. The truce is in place, with some Israeli violations, of course, but people in Gaza are still dying due to diseases, lack of medical care, etc., not to mention some 7,000 still under rubble. Now, welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this episode of the Spotlight. Khaled Marmar, activist and commentator in Toronto. Also with us is Daniel Shaw, academic and political commentator in New York. And welcome to the show, gentlemen. Beginning with Khaled, the WHO's described the collapse of Al-Shafa Hospital in northern Gaza as a tragedy. It's voiced concerns about the detention of some of its medical staff by Israeli forces. So I want to ask you, on what basis has Israel hit hospitals directly and arrested medical staff?
Well, what we should understand is that there are about 35 hospitals in Gaza which are not only dealing with patients, but also sheltering about 120,000 internally displaced Palestinians who were forced to move because their homes were destroyed or Israel forced them to leave. And now they are being forced to leave the hospitals, which shows that Israel's intention is ultimately to ethnically cleanse not only northern Gaza by moving people into the southern part of Gaza, but also to finally attempt to ethnically cleanse even the people in southern Gaza, because it's being bombarded constantly. The hospitals there are also targeted. And at present, 27 of these 35 hospitals in Gaza are damaged and not operating. So you can see people who are sick or people who will become sick because of the contaminated water and other diseases which are spreading, the white phosphorus which cause injuries, all of these people will find no place to be treated, and they are being pushed further into the southern part of Gaza. And Israel hopes that in the end, Egypt might open the borders and allow them into Sinai, even though Egypt has said clearly, we will not allow this.
But the Palestinians are not going there either.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel, you know, hospitals, especially those in the northern part of Gaza, are being ignored fuel. And when I talk to our correspondent there on the ground, he says fuel here means fuel equals life. You know, because, you know, medical equipment, machines, they all run on electricity, and they don't have electricity. They use generators. Generators run on fuel. And this truce is in place. It's got extended for 2 days. So aid is trickling in, a drop in the ocean, of course. But fuel, hospitals are being ignored with fuel. How come?
Because the Israeli plan from the beginning, for the past 75 years and for the past 53 days in particular, has been the complete annihilation of life in Gaza. They want to push all Palestinians into the Sinai Peninsula. They want to continue to displace. This is a 75-year project of dispossession, of displacement. These are genocidal intentions, and that's why shame on CNN and shame on Fox News and the full gamut of media outlets in the mainstream here in the West who have continued to vilify hospitals. And what's extremely sad is that much of the medical staff, as they receive hundreds and hundreds and thousands of children and civilians who need help, the medical staff is checking if it's their families and how many medical workers. At this point, over 105 UN workers have been killed in Gaza. Right. And over 53 journalists, so we can see that the Israeli regime has absolutely no respect for life.
Exactly. So, Khaled, how could this humanitarian catastrophe, in the real sense of the word, caused in Gaza be compensated? Is the damage done reparable in any way?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about structures which were destroyed, they can be fixed with money if the money comes from certain rich Arab countries and the United Nations. But, you know, the lives of all these people, especially the children who were traumatized, you know, you have to remember many of them, about 625,000 children, have not been going to school for the last 7 weeks. Many of them are injured. They have lost their parents. Some of them are sick. And this trauma that they went through, it's going to take a long time to overcome that and lead a normal life. So this is a terrible humanitarian crime. And as the Undersecretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs said, Martin Griffiths, he said, never in his life, and he's been working with the United Nations since the time of Cambodia, he said, I've never seen so much injustice and suffering and carnage. And that has to stop. And even if it stopped now, you still have the problem of fixing these human souls which were affected, especially the children.
Yeah, truly. Daniel, another damage done to Gaza during this recent Israeli war, $1.6 million of losses a day in Gaza's agricultural produce. You know, this is a result of a halt in production due to the war on Gaza. And, you know, even this is not possible because of the contamination that Khaled also mentioned, as UN was also warning about. So they cannot have their produce maybe for years. So this is a big blow again to their economy.
This is the same policy that the U.S. government used for 13 genocidal years from 1962 to 1975 against the Vietnamese people. The plan of genocide is a total plan in the sense that there's an economic blockade. It's an all-out assault on survival in Gaza to attack agriculture. The little bit of agriculture that still existed, because most of us here in the West have no sense that Gaza had already been through, is just emerging from 2 decades of full-scale Israeli and U.S. Blockade. There's only 2 ways in and out of Gaza, which are completely monitored and patrolled by the IDF, by the forces of apartheid and occupation. And that's why here in the West, no one could ever have a sense that October 7th, as tragic as it was, represented a massive prison break of 2.3 million human beings that have been treated in apartheid-like conditions, that have been ethnically cleansed now for 75 years. And of course, it was an act of resistance, but because of the lack of education and context here in the West, we really don't have a sense of what's been transpiring in the past 53 days and 75 years.
Right. And Khaled, you know, there are many more problems caused by the war in Gaza. You know, we mentioned some of them. There are some other, unexploded ordnance. You know, they're unexploded and they are a threat to everybody, especially kids. The sewage system is in tatters. There's contamination in water, as you also mentioned. Diseases are spreading. So what does it take to make up for all this destruction and loss of life?
It's going to take an insurmountable amount of help from the international community. And unfortunately, we cannot count on countries which are supporting Israel, like the United States and even some European countries and Canada, because the damage that was done to the infrastructure, to the hospitals, the schools, the clinics, all of that is going to take lots of time and effort. And we are not sure at this moment who's going to step in and make up for that. And it's going to take a long time for this to take place. So this is really a crisis, not only for Gaza, it's a crisis for humanity, that this was allowed to go on for 50 days without any interruption, even though the United Nations was calling for a ceasefire from the start, even though the public in many of these countries who supported Israel, like Canada, United States, the UK, the public was calling for a ceasefire, but the politicians seem to listen to another master. And this is what is so criminal, you know, about this whole situation, is that it was allowed to last that long. And the victims will be the population of Gaza. The same thing happened, by the way, in 1948, and I suffered that. I was living in Haifa City at that time. It had a population of 70,000 Palestinian Arabs. Only 2,000 remained after the creation of Israel.
Right.
We ended up as refugee camps, and we suffered, and some of us are still suffering in refugee camps.
Right.
I was lucky enough to find my way to Canada, but you know, we have 2-3 generations who have suffered from the catastrophe of 1948, and the same thing will happen for the people of Gaza. 2 or 3 generations will suffer until the root cause of all the violence is ended, which is an apartheid settler colonial regime, which believes that they are supremacists, the same way that the white Afrikaners believed in South Africa. And that came to an end when sanctions were imposed on apartheid South Africa, and the apartheid regime was dismantled. And this is the only solution to the crisis in Palestine.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Daniel, U.S. and Israeli spy chiefs are in Doha, Qatar. They're there for talks on extending the so-called humanitarian pause. You know, we had the first initial one 4 days, and then yesterday it got extended for 2 days. So Wednesday it will come to an end. So what do you expect to happen next?
There's no sign within the ruling summits of the United States, when one looks at the mouthpieces of the ruling class, when one reads CNN and the New York Times, there's small murmurs of humanitarian concern, but the U.S. intelligence cabal and the Pentagon and the State Department and the true ruling class and the foreign policy establishment continue to control all of the information. Plastered across the front pages of the news are just horrific stories of what the Israelis have been through. So the ongoing dehumanization of the Palestinians continues. Now you have the BRICS 11 who have formed the Gaza Contact Group. Xi Jinping and other world leaders have said there has to be a two-state solution. But the problem is that this truly international community, because we can't say that the U.S., Canada, and the other neocolonial powers, they are the antithesis of a community and they have nothing to do with internationalism. But the BRICS 11, we have to understand that Palestine can only imagine reparations and true rebuilding and justice and a return to the 1948 land that was stolen from them within the context of a multipolar world with China and Russia and South Africa and Brazil and India, and these countries truly have a say along with the Muslim countries. Right now, the powers that be have turned their back on Gaza, leaving 2.3 million people to survive on their own, including 1.1 million children. But certainly, yes, reparations will be in order, directly connected to the rise of multipolarity throughout the world.
Okay. Khaled, what's the prospect of a lasting ceasefire? That's what Palestinians and many others asking for, even an end to the Israeli aggression occupation against Palestinians. You know, today the Palestinian envoy to the UN said that Tel Aviv wants us to either surrender and subjugate or die.
Well, you know, the many Israeli officials have been stating over the last few days that the aim is to really get rid of all these human animals. And they mean by that not only Hamas, they mean the Palestinian population. Gaza, because of this big concentration of 2 million people who have risen up and resisted this inhumane siege, which has been going on since 2006, had to be taught a lesson, because if they are not taught the lesson, then the people in the West Bank and in Israel proper, the Palestinians in Israel proper, would then demand their freedom, equality, and justice, including the right of return of refugees. However, as long as the United States is backing this apartheid, genocidal regime, and they have just mentioned recently that they're going to resupply Israel with bombing material. And by the way, these bombs, 2,000-pound bombs, have never been used before in any residential neighborhood before. And they are the cause of this huge damage, which will take a very long time to fix. The Americans still insist on supplying Israel, which means they are encouraging the government of Israel to continue in its mission, which they have stated publicly, that they will eliminate anybody in Gaza who poses a threat to them. And by that, they mean actually any Palestinian. The presence of Palestinians will always be a threat to Israel's hegemony and racism, which they have been practicing for the last 75 years. So this is going to be a tough struggle, especially since the backing from Arab countries and Muslim countries has only been verbal, but there's really no no practical way or action undertaken so far to support the resistance and the people of Gaza.
Now, Daniel, the Iranian foreign minister has sent letters to the ICC urging a prompt investigation and prosecution of Israeli war criminals. What kind of performance do you expect of this international tribunal? Would it prove to sit on the fence, be impartial and independent, and resist all the pressure?
Very, very difficult. I think that would be wishful thinking again in this era dominated by U.S. unipolarity, U.S. dominant hegemony throughout the world. The ICC, the United Nations, these things have existed as fig leaves. They're small international camouflages, so the U.S. can continue to try to dominate throughout the world. I think it's really only the world's people that can stop this genocide in motion. We see massive, massive resistance across the world, civil disobedience led by our Jewish sisters and brothers here in the United States, and of course, Palestinian resistance. We're doing everything we can, but we have a U.S. public that has been exposed to lies, lies that equate the Palestinians with terrorism for 75 years. So it's really an unequal informational war as well. It's important to highlight that the South Africans have invoked the Geneva Convention along with other governments. But it's important to say that Israel is a fascist state. In this country where they claim to care about racism and xenophobia, Israel has one type of quote-unquote democracy for its Jewish citizens, and then the Palestinians can't even be called second or third class citizens. They've been defined and treated as subhuman now for 75 years. And how horrific that it takes a near genocide or a genocide in motion to wake up the U.S. population to the reality of right. Israeli fascism.
Okay, and of course they're waking up. You see the rallies there. Okay, thank you so much, gentlemen, for the contribution. Khaled Mamer, activist and commenter in Toronto. Daniel Shaw, academic and political commentator in New York.
Thank you.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, the reward of the patient ones. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are several places in the Holy Quran that Allah has praised those who are patient. For example, Allah says, "And as for those who believe and do good, we will certainly give them abode in the high places, in gardens beneath which rivers flow, abiding therein. How good the reward of the workers! Those who are patient and on their Lord, do they rely?" This is the verse of the Holy Quran. And if you notice, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is highlighting those who are the patient ones. Those who are patient and their reliance is on Allah. Notice, sabr is put next to tawakkul in this verse. Tawakkul is reliance on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes, shaitan tricks us into thinking that if we display patience in the face of a calamity, we will be at loss. On the other hand, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Holy Quran, "Indeed, the patient will be paid back their reward in full, without measure." Allah has promised that He will pay back the patient, and that too, not in portion, rather in full. And that too, not just measured reward, rather a reward without measure. What else can a humble servant of Allah wish for? If Allah is promising all these rewards for patience, why a believer would not try to be patient in all circumstances? Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the rewards of patience and the promises of Allah to the patient ones. Let me recite a chapter from the Holy Quran for you. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I swear by the afternoon, most surely man is in loss, except those who believe and do good, and enjoin on each other truth, and enjoin on each other patience." Hence, going back to our topic, imagine when Allah says that everyone is at loss. What would that loss entail? Can there be a loss bigger than that loss that Allah is saying is a loss? Imagine. It's unimaginable. It's scary. Allah is saying that everybody is at loss. But then Allah says that not everyone will be at loss. There will be those who are on haq, which is truth, and those who are steadfast and patient. They are the exception to the rule. Now, if anyone wishes to escape being in the category of those who are in loss, they need to make sure that they are on haq and with haq, that is truthfulness and righteousness, and simultaneously they need to be patient and steadfast on this path of haq and righteousness and truthfulness. So being on the path and remaining on the path is important. This will save them from being at loss. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in multiple places in the Holy Quran informs us about that. And if we go through the lives of our beloved Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we see that patience is a trait that each single one of them carried. And just a quick reference to the plains of Karbala, where Imam Hussein alayhis salam, alongside with his family members and his companions, were all patient.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Nation, martyrdom, sacrifice, and commitment. These are words deeply familiar to the Iranian people. They have been under heavy Western pressure and unilateral illegal sanctions since the victory of the Islamic Revolution 44 years ago. The world's powers have used all means to stop Iran from achieving progress, including the assassination of its scientists, specifically those who would have helped the country to make nuclear advancements. The assassinations, which have been orchestrated by the U.S. and implemented by the Israeli regime, have been condemned by many countries around the world. In the capital, Tehran, a gathering was held on Wednesday to commemorate those martyred scientists. The participants say that the Israeli regime does not want a powerful Iran.
We are here on behalf of the people and the country of Bolivia to pay our respects to the martyrs of Iran and all of those who were killed by the imperialist attacks of Israel, which is trying to prevent the progress of the people of Iran and its scientists in the nuclear field for its own interests. We believe that Iran should continue its scientific development in the nuclear field because this issue is important for the progress of any society.
America planted the Zionist regime in the region as a base for the West. For this reason, the West tried from the beginning to make this regime always more advanced than the countries in the region. America and Israel targeted the Islamic Republic, which has been trying to gain power and independence. The independence of the Islamic Republic of Iran angered the West. That is why they try to weaken Iran in any way possible and stop Iranian projects at any level. One of the most important things they tried was assassinations. These assassinations were carried out by Israel Mossad, which is known as the largest terrorist organization in the world.
Iran is a country that, despite international pressure and the assassination of its scientists, has become stronger day by day and has shown that it has never retreated from its ideals and values. Farzana Shuryun, Tehran.
People took to the streets of Pakistan to express their solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine who are confronting Israeli atrocities.
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
Whoever talks about humanity, they must stand with the Palestinian women, they must stand with the innocent Palestinians who are demanding for their right to defend themselves.
Being a nuclear power, we should stand with Israel, with Palestine, because it's not only the responsibility of Iran, it's the responsibility of all the Muslims.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people has been observed annually on November 29th since 1977, based on a call by the United Nations.
I want to show my solidarity and unity with the people of Gaza and Palestine. I believe that, inshallah, one day the Aqsa and Palestine will be free. Genocide happening in Palestine, children are being killed, women are being killed, and I just want to say that we want justice.
In Pakistan, the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people is marked by various events and ceremonies that reaffirm Pakistan's solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Marking the International Day of Palestine in Pakistan serves as a platform for reinforcing enduring unity between the two nations. It symbolizes a shared commitment to common values such as justice, peace, and realization of the rights of the people of Palestine. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Palestinian Embassy in Moscow on Tuesday held a ceremony on the occasion of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. In the meeting, Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov read a message by President Vladimir Putin to his Palestinian counterpart Mahmoud Abbas on the occasion of the Solidarity Day. The message said the creation of a sovereign Palestine within the 1967 borders is a key condition for resolving the Palestine conflict. According to the Russian diplomat, the Russian Foreign Ministry has engaged in intense efforts to help resolve the humanitarian situation in Gaza through cooperation with Iran and other countries.
From the very beginning, we advocated for a cessation of hostilities in order to channel this unprecedented escalation into political context with the goal to agree on an immediate de-escalation of tension and establish negotiations on humanitarian issues our contacts with Iran on Palestine take place at all levels between presidents and foreign ministers. Iran and Russia have powerful positions in the Middle East to help the Palestinians restore their right to self-determination and the creation of a sovereign state.
On the eve of the Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, Moscovites came to the Palestinian embassy and brought toys, flowers, and posters. In 1977, the UN General Assembly decided to observe November 29th annually as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. On this day, in 1947, the Assembly adopted a resolution on the partition of Palestine.
We are here today in solidarity with our people. For 75 years, Palestinians have suffered under Israeli Zionist occupation. Gaza has become a genocidal site in full view of the world, and no one is doing anything to stop the massacre of Palestinians. We demand our own Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
President Putin called it Russia's sacred duty to help people in Gaza. Since the latest escalation began, Russian aircraft have delivered over 57 tons of humanitarian aid to the population of Gaza. Humanitarian aid is being transferred to representatives of the Egyptian Red Crescent Society, who send it to Gaza.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people coincides with Israel's deadly war in Gaza and its intensified atrocities against the people in the occupied territories. However, the determination of Palestinians to resist the regime's aggression is increasing day by day. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Three Palestinian prisoners, including three female prisoners and 30 minors, have been released by the Israeli occupation authorities after midnight in the fourth batch of the exchange agreement with Hamas movement. The freed prisoners expressed their gratitude to the Palestinian resistance, whom they described as the prisoners' backbone. They added that the resistance will do their utmost to release prisoners, mainly women and minors.
Since the first day of the war, when we knew the resistance took Israelis as prisoners, we knew that we would be free. We have always trusted in the resistance. The resistance, that's the backbone of the prisoners, Al-Quds and all Palestine. We really knew we will be free. Today we're both happy and sad at the same time. Our freedom was achieved, but thousands of Palestinians had been martyred. Their blood is a debt on us. We will not forget this. We ask them to forgive us, and inshallah, all the prisoners will be released.
The majority of the minors had been held under the administrative detention without charge or trial. Those freed minors have talked about how the Israeli soldiers tortured them and how they confiscated all of their belongings, including the radios, so they would not know what was going on outside the prisons or anything about the Israeli war on Gaza.
When the Al-Aqsa flood operation was carried out, we were surprised by soldiers with oppression tools and dogs storming our cells and attacking and beating the prisoners. One of the prisoners from Beit Sira was in a cell next to the cell we were held. He was killed. Did you know about him? He was killed because of the torture, and they didn't offer him any first aid. We're grateful to the resistance. Thanks to Allah for the bless of the resistance and Hamas. Thanks to Allah for the bless of Al-Ghassam, without whom no one would have imagined to be free.
Hours before an initial four-day truce in Gaza Strip was set to expire, Hamas movement confirmed that the humanitarian pause will extend by 2 days. This means more humanitarian aid would be allowed into Gaza, and more captives will be released from both sides.
While the families of thousands of Palestinian prisoners are still hoping their loved ones would be freed, they also hope for the truce to be extended and the Israeli war on Gaza comes to an end. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Jamil, 11 years of age. Salma, 16. Jawan, 2. Muhammad, 13. These are the names of just four Palestinian children who have been slaughtered in Gaza since Israel started bombing the besieged territory on October 7. Their names, together with those of other 5,000 deceased Palestinian boys and girls, were placed on makeshift tombstones and displayed in Esquilino Square in the Italian capital to remember all children killed during Israel's ongoing brutal military assault on Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Stop Slaughtering Children in Gaza, was carried out by AOI, an association of NGOs operating in the international solidarity and cooperation sector, representatives of trade unions and other civil society organizations, together with members of Italy's Palestinian community, attended the demonstration.
You cannot be a member of the United Nations, signing accords and voting resolutions that are enforced only if they suit specific interests. This way, the credibility of the institutions is badly damaged.
Palestinian authorities have reported that more than 6,500 miners have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip so far. Earlier this month, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, with hundreds of girls and boys killed or injured every day. As 1.6 million Gazans have been displaced from their homes, many forced to move to the south of the Strip, there are concerns that a large number of them may end up in refugee camps.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
Scholars and thinkers have come together in a meeting at Tehran University to review a 2015 letter sent by Iran's leader to the youth in Europe and the United States. The meeting discussed how the leader's vision is finally being materialized in 2023. In the letter written in January of 2015, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked young people in the U.S. and Europe to attain first-hand knowledge of Islam. Ayatollah Khamenei asked youngsters not to allow the states to hypocritically introduce their own recruited terrorists as representatives of Islam. He also points out that with the mass development of social media, people can go beyond their geographical borders and try to view different cultures and religions objectively. Such pieces of advice from the leader have once again been brought to attention as the youth around the globe are showing interest in Islam after witnessing the resistance and faith of the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Instead of money and materialistic possessions, the youth in Western nations can grab onto a more soothing and inclusive philosophy by forming affiliations with Islam.
Some other scholars call the leader's letter a fatherly address, aiming to uproot the xenophobia that oppressive states usually spread in a bid to justify their violence towards the people of a certain land or ethnicity.
The fact is that these letters were seeds that was put on the ground for it to grow and to sort of bring liberation and knowledge and awareness and awakening right across the world, especially with the children, with the youngsters, and youngsters in particular because they are the future. The fact of the matter is that what has happened in the last month and a half since 7th of October reinforced and indeed brought into practice what the letter was trying to achieve. The awakening of people about the fact that Palestinians are the most oppressed and being deliberately massacre in front of our eyes, day in, day out.
Since October 7th, various Western media outlets have tried to justify Israeli crimes in Gaza. Accordingly, they have largely attempted to ignore the vast distress brought upon the 2.3 million people in Gaza in recent weeks. Young people, however, have been taking to the streets in support of Palestine in large numbers after finding out about Israeli atrocities through social media.
One of the main goals behind the letter by the leader of the Islamic Revolution to the Western youth was to bypass Western media that do not present facts to their audience, society, as well as young people in Europe and the United States. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Pro-Palestinian protesters filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to praise the success of the Palestinian resistance movement and condemn the Israeli regime. Protesters hailed resistance efforts, which they say delivered a humiliating defeat to the Israeli army. Yemenis said they will continue to fight alongside the Palestinians until victory.
We tell the Zionists and the Americans that the Yemeni people who just came out of an eight-year battle and a strangling blockade, that we have put all this aside and are stepping forward to stand with our Palestinian brothers and the Palestinian cause because it is our main cause. We tell the Palestinians, you are not alone.
The demonstration also praised the Yemeni army's resilience in taking meaningful military actions, which pressured the Israeli regime to accept a ceasefire. Yemeni operations consisted of launching a series of drone and ballistic missiles to occupied Palestine and the latest capture of the Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea.
We will close Bab al-Mandeb and we will seize the Israeli and American ships until they stop the aggression on our Palestinian brothers and the resistance in Gaza. We will strike with missiles and the drones. Our missiles will even target the Zionists inside Gaza so that we can abolish the Israeli entity.
We are here to support our armed forces and the naval and air force and all of their military efforts, including the striking of a U.S. spy drone. We also praise the latest operation which captured an Israeli ship in the Red Sea. This was a huge blow to the Zionists.
Despite the announcement of a ceasefire agreement in Palestine, the Yemeni army says it will continue its monitoring of the Red Sea to prevent or capture any ships linked to the Israeli regime. The Palestinian resistance has praised the Yemeni army's stance in supporting Palestinians and for taking decisive military actions against the Israeli regime. The Yemeni armed forces spokesperson has also reiterated that attacks against the Israeli entity will continue until the genocide ends. Yusuf Baudi, Sana'a.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma once more at your service as the host. And then here we have two very dear guests. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaykum assalam.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, as the ritual of this program, I would like you to introduce yourself very much briefly.
Yeah, I'm Ali and I'm from India and I'm a student in the holy city of Qom.
Thank you.
And I'm Sayyid Mustafa and I'm also a student here. I'm actually learning psychology here in Hawza.
Yes.
And I've lived in different parts of the world. Originally, I'm from Pakistan.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming here and for being a part of Back to Reality.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So this artificial intelligence that is getting viral everywhere and everybody is starting to use that and learning how to use that, and many people are making too much of benefits from that. Is this story that has got too much of consequences? I guess previously in Back to Reality, we've been talking about AI, about its pitfalls, about its consequences, good or bad, whatever thing that is going to offer to a modern life. But then why some people like Elon Musk keep talking about the dangers of AI?
That's a great question. And I really love this topic, by the way, because my first reaction to AI is that I actually love it. But because, the way I've used it, right, it's when you start using it, you realize the potential for it.
Exactly, yeah.
And yes, you realize how dangerous it can be as well. Just like how the Industrial Revolution, the internet, you know, changed
exactly.
the world. AI is about to do that, or is doing that, I would say,
in a different way, I guess, because it's got much more potential.
Right. And, you know, it all depends on how human beings use the tool, right? Unfortunately, human beings have been using tools for a lot, you know, they've created a lot of suffering through the tools that we've created, mm-hmm. whether it's weapons, whether it's even the internet or other things.
All dimensions.
So that's where the danger comes in, is how human beings are going to use it. I'll add maybe some other points. I don't know if the brother wants to
add. Exactly. As brother mentioned, AI is a tool. So a tool can be used in good ways and both in bad ways. For example, take a knife. It can be used for a good purpose. It can be used in your kitchen and it can be used to harm someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like similarly, AI, if we describe this as a tool, it can be used in both conditions. And well, as you mentioned about Elon Musk, about talking about the dangers of AI, whereas in contrast, now Elon Musk has made his own AI.
The AI that he created is supposed to counter the dangerous AI.
He was like first, if he followed
the news.
Made the
solution using their own strategies.
Well, yeah, his is a safer or better AI in his point of view, right?
Yeah, it's you know, all like business. When there's money into it, you know, the big people, the big, in the stream, like Bill Gates and Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Earlier, they all used to talk against ChatGPT, but now they have created their own AIs. Like when there's money into it, after all, they're businessmen.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, actually, the Open AI was just created ChatGPT. Elon Musk was one of the founders of that initially, but then he left it, right? But but I can tell you that, you know, in terms of the actual dangers, it is very dangerous. One of the biggest dangers of AI, artificial intelligence, is that, for example, in Elon Musk's own words, is that it can create ideologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can be so good at writing that it can influence people in a much, much faster way,
mm-hmm.
right? The whole, I think what really changes everything is how fast AI can do things.
Yeah.
Right? That's the sort of like danger. It can write up like books and articles in seconds. I hope my teacher's not listening. Like just my homework from the other night, I used AI to do it.
Were you satisfied with that?
It was better than anything I could have written, you know? I mean, it took...
In fact, I use AI too. Like, it's a very helpful tool.
Yeah.
But again, it's dangerous, right? I didn't do the homework properly. That's the thing. Like, I harmed myself in that sense that I didn't, like, go in. An hour's work was done in 10 seconds, literally. Like,
it makes...
Yes, it is, but there are differences.
It makes people lazy, actually.
Yeah, that's one other danger.
One of the dangers.
So, let's just keep that cliffhanger in there. Go for a short break and then come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back. Still, we're talking about AI, the dangers, and things like that. So, people can go lazy.
And one of the dangers that Elon has highlighted about AI is that AI, if you look at AI, it's a self-learning tool. So the chances of AI becoming too advanced in such a way that it can either surpass the human intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once this happens, when it gets out of control of the humans, it might be dangerous.
Why can't we just pull the plug?
That's what happened, actually. There's a thing that actually happened. I don't remember, like, there were two AIs. I guess, like, Microsoft or Facebook's AI, something. There was a thing that happened. I don't exactly remember the AIs. But there were two AI softwares. So they were, programmed in such a way they were, talking to each other. Like one AI had a conversation with the other AI.
Yeah.
So this thing, the AI learned, you know, that it's been done under human watch. Like humans are watching this. You know, in the conversation, they created their own language.
Right.
And they started like conversing in a new language that, you know, it was out of the understanding of the humans.
Really?
So when it was getting out of hands, they just unplugged the system.
I was going to say, one of the things that unfortunately even Elon Musk is doing, they're creating this they're over-exaggerating, I think, some of the dangers of it. They're like, oh, it's going to like take over humanity. Bro, just pull the plug. Like, you know, it's electricity.
Yeah,
it's not like...
but then, you know, have you watched the movie Megan?
No.
The movie in which there was a girl who's been an orphan, and then her aunt was a kind of a scientist, and then she made a robot, and then that robot was taking care of that girl, and then she had too much of feeling that robot to the point that she became to be the enemy of that girl instead of protecting that girl.
It's a common sci-fi theme that they use. Like Terminator was the same idea, that they create robots that ended up Matrix.
So you create something for your own benefit, but then that turns against you.
Yeah, I was saying Matrix, the movie, which is very popular. I'm assuming you guys have watched it.
Yeah.
The whole theme was this, that robots become so intelligent that they started using humans as batteries. Right?
So I guess the same thing could be applied in here.
I think it's too much. It's being exaggerated too high. Like, I would like to see how that would be
because
actually
it's not
possible.
Stay
the thing
like
is,
this.
The thing is, even there's a difference of opinion between the experts. You know, some people are, they believe in the fact that, AI can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
Not at least now, like in the coming future, it can be dangerous. And some people say that, it might not be that dangerous because after all, the creator of AI are the human beings.
But
yeah, it's under the like
it has been proved
well,
that human
the
beings
atom bomb was created
everything.
By human beings, right? But it's a danger.
Yeah,
to us.
There's the other side of the people other opinion. But the first opinion, it can be very dangerous in such a way that AI, it's completely a computer based like software program, and it uses internet and all. So if it, as I said, that if it surpasses the human intelligence, it can do various things. You know, it can hack into any system.
Yeah.
It can, on the level of war.
And that is dangerous.
That is very dangerous.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, let's say it hacks the nuclear system and launches nuclear war against the world.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good. I'm sure whoever is making AI, they're probably placing those controls in there. I mean, we don't know as much about it, maybe.
No, but it's after all, if we believe that, if we believe in the fact that AI is self-learning, and it reaches to a stage that, it can do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not possible. It's, we can say, it has the potential, maybe.
Exactly, because this is just like, let's say, it's the demo version. It's not the one that is so improved and developed. When it is developed to the point, when it is evolved to that highest point, then that way it's going to be dangerous. Because right now you don't need your professor, like for example.
It is, by the way, more intelligent than human beings in the sense that it can carry out tasks better than human beings. For example, there's like the game of Go, which is considered to be the most like complicated game, even more complicated than chess, that, AI beats... an AI can beat a human being at any of these games. Like, or another game that they did was one of these RPG, like, what is it called? World of Warcraft type games. And the AI came up with strategies that no human being could ever come up with, even the best players.
Yeah.
Because of its ability to calculate way into the, way beyond our capabilities. So it's already beyond human intelligence. It's just that it's not being joined together in that manner.
So, again, that's dangerous.
It can be very helpful. It can be very dangerous. And some people... talk in this sense that, people might lose their jobs.
Exactly.
Because of AI.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. But then we have to go for a short break and come back and then see the gist of today's discussion. Welcome back and thank you for staying with us till the last part of today's episode. Well, we're talking about AI is dangerous in what ways it's going to be dangerous, and what are the consequences, the bad consequences that AI could offer to the modern world. We talked about them. You said that it could be more intelligent than human beings. It could go beyond the limits of human intelligence. And you also said that some people might lose their jobs. So all of these things are dangerous.
Yeah, but the thing is, regarding if you're talking about people losing their jobs, AI has the potential to impact the job market.
Yeah.
But it might not necessarily take away the jobs universally. The thing is, it has also created many jobs, people using AI. They have, been doing different works. Mm-hmm. Like,